case for this morning is also Mr. Areola, Areola against Godinez. Ms. Cullison is the other half of Mr. Areola's case. We apologize for the meat locker-like temperature in the courtroom.
It's better to keep us all awake.
We're all noticing it.
May it please the Court. Laura Cullison, on behalf of the plaintiff, Mr. Gilbert Areola, and the putative class of inmates at the Cook County Jail with lower extremity fractures who have been, will be, or are currently being denied medically prescribed crutches inside the living units at the Cook County Jail pursuant to written official jail policy. This case is here on a Rule 23F interlocutory appeal. The trial on Mr. Areola's bifurcated claims concerning the Cook County Jail crutch policy have been stayed by this court pending the outcome of this appeal. The district court erred in denying certification of both a damages class and an injunctive class here. I'd like to start with discussing the injunctive class.
Could I ask, I mean, one of the questions we requested counsel to pay attention to is whether, with respect in particular to the injunctive class, we are talking about Mr. Areola's standing to pursue injunctive relief, or whether we should think of this case more holistically and instead should say, is Mr. Areola entitled to serve as a class representative for that type of remedy? So I would appreciate your focusing on that for a moment.
Exactly, Your Honor. And we believe that the Article III inquiry into standing is interconnected with, but also distinct from, the class issues in terms of, basically, Mr. Areola has proven that at the time he filed his suit, he met, on the unique facts of this case, he met Article III standing.
But he wasn't in the jail anymore, though, when he filed the lawsuit.
That's right. That's the very common sense question. How could he show a causal connection between his injury and the policy if he's not there?
Well, he certainly can for damages, right? No, or at least...
Right. But for injunctive relief, where is the causal connection? And I think that the important thing to focus on is that what Mr. Areola has to show to answer that question, yes, he has standing, is that when he filed suit in April of 2003, was there a reasonable possibility that he would be transferred back to the jail? He is in a unique situation.
And with a broken ankle. I mean, I guess the question in my mind is more than just a transfer back. It's, is he ever going to be subject to this, what you're calling the crutch policy?
Well, and basically that, we would answer that question by posing it this way. His injuries, in fact, are not just the pain and suffering that he experienced when he was forced to walk on his broken ankle. And I would agree that if we were arguing that the future injury, the ongoing injury, required us to show that he's going to break his ankle again, that would be difficult. But that's not the standard. The standard is whether there's a causal connection between the alleged injury and the policy. His injuries are not just that injury, but they're also the mental fear and suffering and the fear of future injury. And the fear of future injury is determined by whether or not he's at the jail. So really, the Article III standing, the point of contention here for the Article III standing, and I would say that the mootness is a somewhat different argument because there's a different burden of proof there, is did he have a reasonable possibility of being transferred back to the jail? Because that's when that causal connection between the fear of future injury and the policy is met. So it doesn't require him to break his ankle again. And indeed, if that were the standard, I think we'd clearly be more into the capable of repetition and evading review doctrine, because it would be difficult on the facts of this case to ever find a plaintiff that would be able to file a suit and seek injunctive relief during the relevant time period, not only because...
Except this Court's decision in Holmes against Fisher, which is not dissimilar to your case, at the end comments, you know, you don't really need an injunctive, a plaintiff who can serve as a class representative for an injunctive class suit anyway. The Court says Holmes can pursue his claim for damages and the precedent will set the rule to be followed in the future, or some other litigant may file suit with a live claim. Even if the second of those doesn't happen, the suit for damages, or possibly even the class action for damages, raises, does it not, exactly the same legal issues about the crutch policy?
it raises the same legal issues, but the putative class here includes those people who would be injured by the policy in the future. And with the hypothetical that you've just said, assuming even that the policy doesn't change, why is there a difference? Those future inmates are still going to be subject to that policy.
Well, but suppose, just to follow this through for a minute, suppose Mr. Areola pursues his lawsuit for damages, either alone or as the head of a B3 class, and suppose at the end of the day you prevail and it's found that the crutch policy was illegal and it caused him pain while he was there, and maybe the ankle didn't heal right and whatever other things happen when you ignore a doctor's order not to use weight-bearing things. And I guess it's your hypothesis that in the face of a decision like that, the Cook County sheriff would continue to use the crutch policy. And I'm not so sure that that's a reasonable assumption if the policy is found to be unlawful.
That assumption is based on other cases that I've tried with them. I think that
you find them stubborn.
Well, I think that their position on the on changes, policy-wide changes, is consistent with their argument in the brief on Duran. We're only going to do it if we have to do it under the Duran consent decree. And yes, I have absolutely no doubt. And I think Mr. Castiglione would tell you that if Mr. Ariel prevailed in this case and got damages, they would keep that policy in place for the reasons that he brings in his brief. There's absolutely no question in my mind about that. And there is, at the time that he filed suit, he does not have to show that it was absolutely certain that he was going to be transferred back. He has to show a reasonable probability, and there are five things that show that reasonable probability that give him Article III standing. First of all, the record's clear that in 2001, that's exactly what happened. He was transferred temporarily because he had ongoing legal proceedings in Cook County. He was sent back to the Cook County Jail. Those proceedings were still live when he filed his suit. And the district court recognized that. Now they were on appeal. But again, we're not talking about an absolute certainty. It's not even a preponderance. We don't have to show that it's more likely than not he would be transferred back to the jail. What we have to show is that there was a reasonable probability. Those two facts.
So your position then is because those proceedings were still pending on April the 28th, 2003, that distinguishes him from the general population of prisoners in the Illinois Department of Corrections.
Absolutely. And for purposes of standing, not only that,
Are you still drawing a distinction for purposes of this putative V2 class between pretrial detainees and people at the IDOC?
We have never made that distinction between pretrial. That's a distinction that I think Mr. Castiglione might speak to, but no. The class, as it's currently defined in our motion to certify, is inmates with fractures, medically prescribed crutches, that have those crutches taken away and are forced to walk on their broken ankles.
You don't care why they're in the Cook County Jail. If they're there and they fit that.
Well, we think that the law, either under the Eighth Amendment or the 14th Amendment, would. It's a distinction without a difference for purposes of this particular claim. But not only those two reasons show that he had a reasonable probability of being transferred back, but also he had additional legal proceedings and that he had filed this case, which also creates a possibility that there would be a need to transfer him back to Cook County. Moreover, the order that the respondents rely on in the separate case has problems on its face, but was not in existence at the time that Mr. Areola filed this suit. This case is clearly distinguishable from
Duran.
That's right. The order that any inmate housed at the Cook County Jail could be transferred to the IDOC. It didn't even exist.
Right.
So as of April 2003, all the evidence that we have in the record indicates that there was a reasonable probability that he would be transferred back. It's a different issue, I think, and an issue that the respondents bear the burden of proof on to prove that when he filed his motion to certify, had that passage of time rendered his claim moot. Even if, though, somehow, without any direct evidence in the record on this point, they want to say that there was no chance that he could be transferred back, because I think that's the relevant standard here under Garrity. There was no chance that he would be transferred back. This case is virtually a poster child for the capable of repetition yet evading review doctrine. You have a plaintiff with Article III standing.
Except again, I mean, we've said very clearly it has to be you, and since it's the crutch policy you are challenging, surely you must need to show that he could be subject to that policy again. And I don't, I'm not sure I see that, again, on the injunctive side of this case.
He still has live legal proceedings here in Cook County that are ongoing.
When is somebody going to take his crutches away again in the Cook County Jail? He does, as far as I know on this record, he doesn't use crutches.
Well, again, I think that the injury that he suffered and the injuries that are occurring here, well, first of all, I should step back and say.
Why don't you finish your thought now? I'll give you 1 minute after Mr. Castiglione's argument.
Right. On the mootness claim, it's the respondent's burden to show that there is no chance that he could be transferred back to Cook County.
They won't let him play soccer again. That may slow it.
That's true. I can't find any evidence in the record other than the Duran decree that they're relying on to say that there's no chance that he'll be transferred back again. And that only applies to inmates housed at Cook County.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Castiglione.
Your Honors, good morning, counsel. May it please the court. I am Paul Castiglione, and I represent Defendant Salvador Godinez, Ernesto Velasco, and Sheriff Tom Dart. Your Honors, plaintiff has no legitimate expectation of being placed in Cook County Jail on some future date while nursing a broken ankle. And that was true from May 23, 2001, the day after he left. He was transported back from Cook County Jail to the IDOC. Plaintiff never had Article III standing to seek injunctive relief regarding living conditions at the jail. This case is analogous to Holmes versus Fisher.
Let me ask you, I mean, I'm worried about this Article III standing part of what you're saying, which is one of the things the court asked you to talk about, because I think we would all agree that from an Article III point of view, at least with respect to Mr. Areola's individual case, he can bring a case for damages. I mean, there are various criteria that, you know, have to be. But let's assume, you know, that the ankle, he's going to allege that he was damaged by having his crutches taken away from him. As you've pointed out, the court didn't reach the B3 class certification issue. There's a lot of back and forth about how the timing of this appeal affected that. So I just want to put that to one side. But as you know, in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, Rule 54C, it says that people can ask for whatever kind of relief they want to ask for. And indeed, even if they don't ask for relief, they're entitled to receive whatever it is they're entitled to. So from an Article III point of view, it seems to me there is concrete adversity. There's, you know, he's alleged causation. There's redressability. And as a remedy, maybe he's not entitled to an injunction if he is not in a position ever to benefit from an injunction. But that strikes me as more a remedial point than a fundamental Article III point. I'm not familiar with cases where we say Article III here, no Article III there. There's an overall case for controversy.
Your Honor, I understand that. I think I'd point out that there were cross motions for summary judgment filed below, which were denied. So you're quite right. Plaintiff does have a damage claim, a due process claim for damages, which is pending.
Right. And so I guess I would, if we were sitting here talking about, does Mr. Areola comply with the 23A criteria? Does Mr. Areola, if we were on a B3 appeal, you know, fit those things? I would have no problem understanding, you know, what it is we need to be talking about. Is he typical? Is he, you know, all these things? But from an Article III point of view, carving out from a case or controversy one part where suddenly Article III drops out and another part where Article III drops in again seems odd to me.
Well, I think going back to Holmes, which I think that's essentially what Holmes said.
Well, Holmes is a little ambiguous. I have it right here because I've been studying it.
Well, Article III obviously is not a technicality, and there has to be some, you have to have some concrete injury. And I think in the context of an injunction, I think what was required is that the person seeking the relief should have to be subject to the sort of injunction they're asking down the line. Now, here, what you have, the handicap policy at the Cook County Jail really balances two interests. On the one hand, it's there to secure the facility, to secure a maximum security facility like Division 9. It's intended, and the purpose is to make two things, really. One, to make sure that crutches or other items that really are contraband, You know, a crutch could be swung like a baseball bat. They're metal rods that could be converted into shanks. They're screws that could be used to disable
access. Is everybody in that unit there as he was a transferee from a state prison while he was in some post-conviction proceedings? Are there pretrial detainees that are in this?
Primarily, Judge. I mean, I think the...
So he's mixed in with pretrial detainees in this Unit 9.
That's right, but it's a maximum, it's a designation, it's a maximum security facility. It's for individuals who are either charged with more serious felony crimes, or someone like Mr. Areola, who was already convicted and brought back for a different proceeding.
But they can use their crutches in the common areas. This is just a living, as I read the policy, this just applies to the living areas.
When
he's out in the cafeteria, he can be clubbing away, I guess.
I think the inmates eat if I'm not mistaken, I believe, where they couldn't use the crutches is in the day room, Your Honor.
They could use it in the recreation if they went out for recreation.
If they left it, right. If they were to, say, go to court or go somewhere else where they're being guarded. Where they can't have the crutches is when they're in an area where there are no correctional officers around.
But apparently he can have broom handles and other things, which is what he alleges he was using in lieu of the crutches, since the doctor had instructed him to keep off the foot.
The doctor did instruct him. I think it's important, though, to remember that the doctors, we don't want guards acting as doctors, we also don't want doctors not abiding with regulations at the jail. And that's...
You know, this is an amazing thing about this case. Looking at the policy, it seems conceivable to me that one could administer this policy in a way that satisfies both of those interests. It's just that on the allegations that are now before us, that's not how it's being done. You could immediately transfer out of Division 9 everybody who has a physician order to stay on crutches and put them back in Division 8 or wherever it is you put them.
And, Your Honor, that's exactly what happens.
But according to this record, there are all sorts of people, including Mr. Areola himself, who don't get transferred, despite the fact that we have evidence that there's a crutch order.
Mr. Areola, on three occasions, was sent over to Division 8.
He didn't live in there. He was not allowed to, live his life in an environment where he could use his crutches for even such routine things as to, use the restroom facilities or whatever,
Well, the areas within the day room are relatively short, and it may well be that the doctors...
I don't know if you've ever broken anything, but if you're on a non-weight-bearing order, the doctors don't give those orders frivolously, I assume.
Well, I spent some time on crutches. I'm familiar with that. But I think the thing to remember here is the doctors at CIRMAC, and there's evidence in the record which I could point out to the court at record 174. Offhand, I can't find it. Well, there's evidence in the record, Your Honor, that it's really up to the physicians at CIRMAC to make medical placements. And, in fact, if that didn't happen here, one of the problems with the suit is that the plaintiffs did not sue the right defendants. They didn't sue...
The doctors said, we want crutches. It's the guards that take the crutches away with the little order that we have photocopied for us somewhere in these materials.
Well, the doctors can, though, have the authority, the doctors from CIRMAC have the authority to make a placement of someone non-ambulatory in an appropriate setting, such as Division 8.
But and would a doctor think of somebody as non-ambulatory if they can ambulate with crutches?
Depends. I mean, it depends how the severity of the sprain or the break. If somebody had two broken legs, they wouldn't be ambulatory. And you think of the purpose of the handicap policy. It's not for the guards to make a judgment. If they're presented with evidence that someone can't move around, they're to contact their watch commander and arrange to bring the inmate or detainee over to Division 8, and then the doctor is supposed to make the appropriate placement.
That's not what happened with Mr. Areola on the facts as we are to take them at this point. He's on a non-weight-bearing order, and, could somebody violate the doctor's order? Sure. I mean, and it would probably lead to arthritis later in life or something else adverse medically. But he was put in a position where he has the order, and the guards nonetheless take the crutches away. So the guards are overriding the doctor's medical decision.
Except the doctors, had they felt he was non-ambulatory and couldn't put any weight on the crutches at all, certainly could have put him in the infirmary in Cermak. And we cite a testimony from Dr. Malkin, Superintendent Brown, at Record 141, to that effect, that it's the medical, those decisions are up to the doctors. But the point I was going to say about the handicap policy, Your Honor, is to balance the need for security against the need for, you know, making sure that what the policy says, if someone's not ambulatory, they have to be transferred out. And
there's so much evidence on this record that there are some lines being drawn, I guess, beyond ambulatory, non-ambulatory. Because if ambulatory means, you know, that you can crawl along the floor without using your foot, I guess maybe that is the situation you're thinking of. I don't know.
But I think that for a person to have Article III standing, to go back to to have Article III standing to challenge this, they should be someone who would be subject to the ultimate result of their injunction. And Mr. Arreola simply isn't, and he hasn't been from the moment he left the jail. He's not had Article III standing to bring this type of his injunction claim since he was sent back. I would briefly, on just two other points for a moment, as to the 23B3 class. The standard of review for the denial of class certification of that, I believe, is abuse of discretion.
That's only been denied without prejudice.
That's the point. It was denied without prejudice and with leave to replete. There is no way Judge Cannelli's decision to deny that without prejudice, with leave to replete for more specificity, could be an abuse of discretion. So we feel his ruling should be affirmed. Judge Cannelli invited plaintiffs to come back, and with more specificity is whatever claimants were out there for whom this proposed claimant could be an adequate representative for a mass tort. They didn't do so. That's not an abuse of discretion. And the last point I'd make, Your Honor, is that the denial of class certification can be affirmed on the basis. I see my time is kind of fish. The motion for class certification, in our view, Your Honor, should not have been allowed to be filed in the first place. It was filed some over 2 years after the original complaint was filed. The putative class members would have had no notice that there was any type of claim that would cover them. Any claim on their behalf would have been time barred by the time the motion for the second amended complaint was filed. There was unfair surprise to defendants. It should not have been allowed to be filed in the first place. And the denial of class certification can be affirmed on that basis as well. So for those reasons, we would ask that this court affirm the decision of the district court denying plaintiff's motion to certify a class for both under Rule 23b-2 and 23b-3. Thank you.
Your time had expired, but we'll give you another minute or so.
Your Honors are correct that there is a full factual record, and most of the facts that Mr. Castiglione has been discussing with you are undisputed facts. You'll find them at docket 193. However, what the defendants have admitted in those facts is not necessarily dovetail with some of the allegations that are made here today. So I would commend you to that. And for example, the fact that he used brooms and mops and whatever was available to try and get around is a fact that they admitted in that particular submission at docket 193. But to turn back to this, there are two questions here. Did Mr. Arreola have a reasonable probability of being sent back to the jail when he filed his suit? And we've explained why. On the mootness, have the defendants shown that there's no chance he can be transferred back to the Cook County Jail? They have not. And on that basis, Mr. Arreola has Article III standing, and the injunctive class clearly does matter here. This is a prototypical class designed for Rule 23b-2. They have acted against these inmates on a uniform basis based on a written policy that's applied throughout the jail. Mr. Castiglione talked about, but they could transfer people out. That would be an interesting argument if there were any evidence in the record to support it. There is not. Every officer, every superintendent that we deposed was clear that the policy required them to take away the crutches. And that's what they did. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
We appreciate very much your fine efforts on behalf of your client. Thank you as well to Mr. Castiglione. We will take the case under advisement. The court will be in recess until sometime soon.